end of the group, you brought up transitions, and it felt like so much of what I've been looking at all week kind of came up around this whole thing. And so I'm either on to something or conditioning on to something. I'm not quite sure why.
Well, regardless, whether you're onto it and conditioning will leap onto it, yeah, or conditioning is on it and you will see through it, you're both involved.
And what I'm seeing is that everything's in transition all the time. Yeah. I mean, everything is in movement.
That's right. The Buddha talks about it as everything is in flux.
Everything is in flux. And so what really came to me was, you know, what I talked about earlier in the retreat, that, you know, this odd that was coming in to get something from this, you know, retreat. Like I had to make sure this morning, you know, I kind of went through that. And that realizing that this is practice, you know, it's just showing up, seeing what is being presented, move, like kind of saying yes, taking a step, and then seeing again what's being presented, and then so it's all in transition. So it feels like any time that something feels different, then there's the odd, and there's an odd. Any time it's just in movement, that's where it feels like that's just that there's practice. I mean, that just kind of is. So
Our people hate change.
Yeah, and I thought so much about how people say, oh, I can't wait to settle down. And it's like, well, who wants to settle down? This one that can just go to sleep, you know, the one that just wants things to be. And so thinking of it in that way, I felt so this lightness, like it's really easy now to not take things personally. Because all we're required to do is show up. Like, even if there's some odd that wants to facilitate, well, who knows, maybe the first step I take in the facilitation, something else is going to be there, and that's where I'm going to go.
Yes.
And so it makes it feel like I talked about the seriousness coming in here, it makes it all of a sudden feel, it's all in play. I mean, it's all just, let's try this. Oh.
Rather than holding a fixed idea about something and trying to make a moving world fit into that fixed idea.
Yeah, and then just kind of transition, like thinking so much, well, transition is going from here to here. Well, transition really is like, it's every single second is transition.
Yes, and our experience of it is more going from
here. Yeah. And so, anyways, I just found this really great reading, and seeing this every second transition. It's not a matter of me going from work to home. It's just that transition.
Yeah, it's that kind of Zen thing of now.
It's never
encouraged.
It's
like,
I'm going to get
now out. It's not.
Yeah.
How much is it really nice? Yeah. And then, it's like this, doesn't it? And it is exciting because you're no longer through life. This life is going like this, and you're riding away.
So when I facilitate a group, I know that I'm clarifying and And I think I would find it helpful to have one or two examples of each, or to have a description of each, followed by one or two examples, perhaps, to emulate of each, and maybe one or two examples
of
clarifying and drawing. And
Each one of you, but an awful lot of you, I prefer to do that naturally. Just naturally, as a part. It just kind of slips out, even when you're reflecting. You know, when we're just mostly focused on reflecting, there's that, you mean, and that's really clarified. Mm-hmm. Even if it's, do you mean, and you only change a word, it sets the person in motion again to re-look at and take the next step in what they're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things coming to this retreat that I was hoping to get was to be able to take what I've been doing for a long time without really having a vocabulary for it anymore and getting, you know, the vocabulary back. And also to see where it might be, you know, slipping, where in, so in addition to like good examples of each of those, like examples where I sort of slipped off the path.
Uh-huh. So you mean places where you just missed the point utterly?
Well, places
the
where...
The answer is no, that's not what you meant. So that was a very bad example. Clarify. You were polite. You were going to try to make it work.
The matter was, that isn't what you said at all.
Yours was a slip, mine was a over the cliff.
All right, I'll work with
that. Yeah, Dan, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit, or you could talk more about the mentoring, facilitating, and enabling. How it seems like we went by pretty fast. And it seemed like it was important to know or to get an idea of when we get stuck in one and when we use the others.
And are you thinking of just in life?
Well, I'm
not just when you're facilitating.
I'm thinking of self-facilitating, but then to me that's where I always start with it, because then I know when I hear it, what's appropriate. I mean, what
have all of you done the two chair thing with Dave?
What?
Two chairs, apparently not. The two chair thing. Before the retreat is over, I'm going to ask you if you would do that with people.
Sure.
Okay. Not tonight, but before the retreat is over, because to me that's such a great disidentifying, facilitating the self kind of approach. Now, this is one of those where there's no problem. We're not distancing ourselves from Jan's question. But I think it would be really interesting to have this group of people talk about their experience of those three things. Mentoring, facilitating, and enabling.
And then, yes, I should say, for me, enabling, it was like, what? Do we do that? Oh, I guess I gotta look.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, hearing more about that and seeing examples.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Hey.
Just off the hip, it seems like the difference between enabling and the other two is that enabling doesn't... The point of enabling is to make it so the other person does not have to do practice.
Yeah. Usually... rooted in a false sense of sympathy.
Yeah, for sure. And kind of getting on the side of them, but not really getting on the side of them, more getting on the side of their conditioning, helping them kind of smooth past it or to do a destructive behavior because it makes them feel good or like if somebody is a victim to, you know, sympathize with that. And it seems like also if the person who's doing that is getting something for their condition too. You know, I get to be who I am. You know, I'm helpful.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like a little condition deal that's being made where everybody is kind of getting to hold on to their condition, not having to make it.
Uh-huh. And we particularly see this in close relationships. Right? A lot of close relationships will fall into that.
Yeah.
Whether it's couples or whether it's friends. You know, you kind of work out a, you leave my conditioning alone and all the years alone. And I'll be sure. I mean, it's not that.
Seems like
taking care of.
Difference between between that and facilitation and mentoring is huge, because it seems like both facilitating and mentoring are on the side of practice and art. It just seems to me, just off the hip, the difference between those two would be, facilitation is a, there's still sort of a separation kind of between the person being facilitated and the facilitator, even if it's inside. Now, facilitator really has no relationship with the person other than creating a space for them to have the experience they're having, or I'm not exactly how you'd say that. But the mentoring seems like it adds something else. The mentoring is actually a relationship, an ongoing relationship where there's just somebody with some wisdom who is able to offer to somebody.
So I have a couple of examples. In my inner process, when I'm identified, I'm enabling that part of me who is doing whatever. When I'm identified with that part.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting distinction. So the very fact that you let that part act out whatever that is an enabling rather than one of the either facilitating or mentoring. That's interesting.
And then this morning, let me back up. Yesterday, I got the wonderful gift of being up early and watching the moon set. Mm-hmm. And then she wanted to do it again this morning. So I mentored the one who was in bed and did not want to get up. So that the other one could have her fun.
Uh-huh. So it was a conscious choice between conflicting desires.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Would you make any kind of
deal? The one with the bed sleeper?
Yeah.
She didn't need a deal. She just was happy to go along with it.
Uh-huh. All right.
We could say, we've already had, 10 hours of sleep. Way more than we get at all.
Well, I have this situation where I have been watching the enabling, the facilitating, and mentoring all around the same situation. And, I just work like that. And so the enabling was the one that was really doing the reading all the old emails and just crying and being with and one day I was walking along really feeling sorry for myself and enabling myself in that way, and something you said at my very first CINW just popped in my head. It was when he said it's like you have a sick child in bed with a thermometer, and you're like, oh, you poor thing, and you take the thermometer out of his mouth and lie down, and you're just, you're the sick child. Well, it felt exactly like that. Then I moved to facilitating. Once I got here, I was able to just have this image of myself lying with my head in my lap, just kind of been talking to, she was still very in pain, and was really, but there was enough disidentification where I was just listening and reflecting that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a mentoring of this part that was able to say, okay, now let's look at, I guess I was ready, this part was ready to look at this situation and really kind of look at it from a practice perspective, and that was the voice of wisdom saying, you guys, there's a problem here. There was just some wisdom being imparted that really wasn't in the facilitation. The facilitation was just reflecting.
Uh-huh.
And so it seems like that's been a procession
that I don't know, for some reason, I was able to
get out of here. Yeah, and you know, you change language through it. Mm-hmm. You know, in the first one, you were this. I mean, you were completely, I was doing this, I was doing that. When you were facilitating, it was you were facilitating her.
Okay.
And then with the mentor, you actually, I would suggest it, you were taking the mentor role because she was ready.
Yeah. And you know what occurred to me around that is that just the phrase taking refuge in Bodhisattva conduct is actually so present right now. It's just literally refuge. Because I could have stayed in that enabling years, you know?
A lifetime.
But it became sort of like kind of clawing your way on the shore to just, you know.
Yeah. Well, and what we talk about here so much with practice, the beauty of knowing that there's another possibility. Even when it feels like you're as far down as you can go, you know there's an alternative to the experience that you're having. And that makes all the difference in the world.
So, listening a lot of it, because I've been in the room, especially with me, so you can guide us.
The people back there here, over the crickets, almost.
They're
not crickets, are they? They're frogs.
Does that a no or anything?
They're kind of...
Okay, so the enabling concept was new to me when you brought that up. So I've been looking at it around participating in the retreat because I thought I had been mentoring and saying, hey, it's okay, you know, you're kind of doing the best that you can, you're feeling really nervous about speaking and, facilitating in front of everybody, so it's okay, you know, I love you, you're doing the best that you can. And that did feel kind of like mentoring, but when you brought up the enabling, it did really click that, wow, there's something else happening here too. Maybe someone was being mentored in that, but someone was being left behind. That person who, you know, drained her savings account to fly to California because this practice is so important and she wants to really get to participate. She doesn't want to hear, you know, it's okay to be quiet. She came to really participate and she needs somebody to stand up for her. So I don't know if that other was enabling or if it was just like that other person got missed or what.
Well, I would encourage you to consider it was enabling. And here's why. And it touches so important. It's okay, you're doing the best you can. Has a tone of, because, you know, and so, given the state of your blood, really, you're doing great. Which is different from that deep sense of knowing, I'm doing the best I can. Which comes from a very disidentified place. So, yes, and I think you clarified it, that when you are giving your energy to her, you're, in a way, it's funny because you're sort of enabling, but also disabling.
Yeah.
Because, it's not, you know, she could probably really benefit from the network. You know, she can see Big Sister over there going, I want to play, and somebody saying to her, well, it's okay, you're little. Someday, you know, maybe you'll be big enough and you'll be able, but that's not what she wants to hear. Yeah. So I think that's a really important distinction.
Yeah, there was a moment in some of the other mentoring, what I thought was mentoring was saying, was kind of like, okay, even if you don't, you know, get a chance to speak for this retreat, then, you know, just show up for the next one and do your best. And I knew, like, there was a part of me.
That's not
feeling
good.
So then you brought up the enabling, and I'm so grateful because I never heard of that before, and now it gave me a chance to look at the different teachings too. I always thought that was mentoring.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Thank you, Tony.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I missed the conversation on that. I'm sorry, I missed that. But what comes up for me between the three, with especially enabling, which I, because I've been thinking a lot about the drop the conversation and just come back. I mean, that all day has been so helpful. Just that reminder, just drop it. It's now. Forget the past and all that. Mm-hmm. So enabling is the conversation. Is the we join into okay, let me listen to that. All right, let's see what's going on. Okay. And it go it can go on forever.
Yes, and the point that you're making, what to me what's so important about that is it's really hard to tell, are you talking to a personality or is it conditioning?
Mm-hmm.
Because once we get into that kind of relationship with it, how do you really tell who that is that you're conversing with?
Right. Well, the little bit that I see in that is initially, it's like I can already tell if I'm in that conversation and there's just a feeling of like, oh, this is not, that's conditioning.
Yeah.
But if there's a sense of like, okay, who's here? And, what's going on for you? It feels a little different.
Yes.
Initially, though, sometimes it's a little murky.
That's And for me, that's not a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Right. Starting off with, okay, who's here?
Yeah. Okay. All right. I sense somebody's unpacking there.
Yeah.
And you're in that facilitator role.
Yeah.
Rather than, what's the difference? Not that Amy has ever had this kind of conversation. But anyway, to be in that, to me, is the conversation. Or it has that tone of somebody's unhappy and we're really indulging this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, collusion thing.
Collusion.
That
right.
Sort of.
We're not helping anybody out of anything. We are really in it with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I was really struck by that. Whoever said that, that enabling involves being identified with. That's what came up for me. It's like, somehow I'm getting identified, so I'm part of the problem, I'm part of the issue. And I was thinking of invitation of mentoring in my own experience, where basically with a mentor you just stand between the level one and the abuse.
Yes.
And so there was no confusion that the mentor was the little one, and it wasn't sort of like, oh, you poor thing. It was just, I'm going to stand here.
And by the way, you're fine,
yeah. And what came up for me earlier when you were talking about enabling and that kind of thing, the image that came up for me that arises from now about mentoring is that scene from the Bible where Jesus tells this crippled person, pick up your pallet and walk. And it's a really powerful scene because this guy's been crippled for years and years and years, and so Jesus basically said, are you ready? You know, checked in, and the guy was ready, and then in compassion, he said, now pick up your pallet and walk. It feels like that's what the mentor does. The mentor is, and the facilitator, I think, they'll start from that conviction of the other person's adequacy.
Yes.
And I think the mentor doesn't.
Yes. Yes. In fact, oftentimes, I would suspect the enabler is rooting for the person to stay in a belief in inadequacy.
Yeah.
Because it's like an escape from needing to show up.
Yeah, and I think about it in my own life as somebody who's been in helping professions. It's easy to get trapped in that role of needing the other person to stay helpless. So you continue to have a job. You continue to have a role and identity. And I think the same thing happens internally.
Uh-huh.
If there's someone invested in being that person who doesn't really let the other person get up and walk.
Yeah, yeah. And the other piece that I just want to underline about that is that asking, are you ready? Sensing when it's appropriate to ask that question, because there is a knowing this person is ready, mm-hmm. getting confirmation of that, mm-hmm. and then, okay, let's go. Mm-hmm. There's no pushing, it's not demanding, and the timing is really important. Because a few seconds earlier, and the guy's going to go, no, no, I'm not ready. So, and that's so much of what we're practicing with facilitation, is learning that timing.
Yeah, this is the way that I look at it, in this way, being that it's like conditioning. I mean, another part of conditioning is talking to a part of something that's in conditioning. And for me, there's no movement. It's like what we've been saying, but I took a really good example of that when I was trying to learn to ride this.
The devil machine.
That was time in traffic, right? So, I mean, it was terrifying. And there was, and everything, any outside feedback was not helpful because everybody was saying,
oh my God, you're going to be killed!
So, it's like, I saw these distinctions so well, because it was like, okay, you're afraid, that, you know, it's okay to be afraid. And I could see that if I stayed there, this thing would never get
right. It's going to be in the garage.
Yeah, because, all right, it's okay to be afraid, you know, and you're really terrified. And
you don't need to do that.
So you don't even need to do it. You don't need to do it. Why are you doing it?
I'm stepping on.
That was there too. And yet then the mentor, it was so clear, you know, okay, what's the first step? You know, I know you're afraid, and, you know, and that's okay. Now, what's the first step? What are we going to do first?
Yeah,
turn it on.
Because I was saying the other night about the woman who said, I know I'm going to have to become a vegetarian or leave this practice. That's what the mentor knows. Okay, that's the perspective that the mentor is coming from. So, from the mentor's perspective, it doesn't actually matter when you already write that thing, which can get confused with, well, then why do it? What the mentor knows is this has to do with you finding your adequacy in spite of the fear.
Yes, and the mentor knew all along that I could do that.
Yes.
You know, there was no question.
It's the difference between a mentor and a cheerleader.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a difference there.
Yeah, the mentor really does know your capability and is supporting you in moving to that.
Yes.
It's not based on some untested idea about what's possible for you. I mean, this is true in mentoring anywhere. You know, if you're in business, you don't have a mentor who goes, follow me. The idea of a mentor is, yes, you can, and I will support you as you take the steps to prove it to yourself.
And it was just so compassionate, because, it helped me this much.
Yeah.
And then this much.
Yeah.
And then this much. And this far. And this far. And then
all the way to the end of the driveway.
But I mean, even halfway there, and then you come back. And then there was this day I knew I should get all the way there and all the way back. And it was still terrifying. Still is terrifying. And yet, it's like, this is part of the thrill, but. Well, just for the record,
she's going to ride on a Harley.
Not Harley. And just for the record, what the incentive was, this is really
you know, is what's the one, wanting to do this for the human universe, the carbon footprint and all of that. So there was an incentive besides, you know, all that. And it, but it was just so clear, the different, yeah, approaches, you know, and you know, I could have been just said, I'd get on that thing and just go, whatever it was, but there was none of that. And it made the whole thing a really, besides terrifying, nice experience. Mm-hmm. And it's made me like to write it instead of...
Well, and it's a process.
Right.
So once we, you know, for those of you who haven't read it in a while, that's really what you're describing as a fear book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you just take a step and you adjust.
Yeah.
And when you're really confident, relaxed there, you take another step. No hurry. Just building that confidence that it's fine. And that's a process that then you can apply to anything else that you would want to do.
Yes, and I knew that too. And the beauty of the mentors is never, you hear that okay part. I mean, yeah, you're okay with your spirit, but it was, every step was okay. Hey, that's okay.
Wow, that was good, you know.
And each time, yeah, each part of it was okay. It was never,
and you're in relationship.
Yeah.
You're right about it.
Yeah.
There is somebody who's on your side and really rooting for you and knows that you're fine. And,
right.
So that to me is the best, you know, experience of all those different ways of doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is so helpful and so just perfect for what I've been looking at. It feels like, One process that I'm looking at a lot lately is just how I do preparation. So anticipation, this whole thing we're talking about with fear. And I'm watching it right now. There's something that will happen about 10 days after this retreat that's triggering a lot of sort of that sense of, which is totally going after a roller coaster and, you know, all that sense through the bump. Kind of feeling. So I'm watching this process, and there's the experience of just, you know, really, kind of experience of peace, of just, yeah, okayness, this is okay, we can get to this in a compassionate place, we're adequate to this, you know. And then I'm just watching, it's like a school of fish swimming around. They're little. Right? They don't have that much power, but there's a whole school of them. So.
They're back to breeding.
Some of those where I'm okay, but then if I have like, that off night sleep or something, you know, they'll start getting in there.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just interesting because I feel like one of the most powerful things in this practice for me to get is what Tim's talking about with the enabler completely standing for the person's inadequacy. It just, you don't see that at first, you know. It took me a little while to do that. And so I'm seeing with this process for preparation, because there's often things I have to prepare for and have fear arise and, you know, forget. There's the enabler will either point it to preparation from that condition perspective, because you're so inadequate, you have to pretty much do a list of 500 things to meet the standard for this event. Stay up all night, you know, it's horrible. Or the opposite.
Wing it.
Yeah.
A few hundred people.
Yeah. You know.
Fine. That will be fine.
This is from this pseudo spiritual voice of like, what exactly does it say? Don't fall for that. So don't do anything. You know. And then with the facilitation and access from that place of mentor, there's just so many other choices. It's just the place of and I can watch even as I'm talking that fear arise and kind of going in and out of it with this one, but that. Just that it seems like it comes to me as what's appropriate preparation, and that it's all coming from a sense of you can do this and this is fun. It's fun preparation. It's enjoyable.
It's exciting.
Yeah. But I know I'm going to be really looking at it in this next.
My computer monitor at home was a teacher. Mm-hmm. And her teacher says, worry is not privilege. So any time that I'm not, then when she's not wearing the t-shirt, the chair wears it. So it's always there as a reminder, because that's one of my favorite practice reminders.
Yeah.
You know, it's worry is such an easy way to leave the moment. It seems, and especially in those situations where there's really pressure, and there's an actual deadline, that this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Just little reminders for yourself that, you know, what I'm doing is coming back here where I realize, for God's sake, it's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the funny part about most of what most people like us do. You know, we have an absolute choice about this stuff.
Yeah.
And so we set something up that we choose to do, and throw ourselves into hell over it.
Yeah. And it's interesting because when conditioning or the enabler puts the attention on the content instead of the process, so it's focusing you on adequate to this thing, but it's the feeling of being inadequate to that fear.
How many people relate to that? That you're more afraid of their feelings than anything. That is such an important point. I'm not going to be able to stand it. I can't stand it. It's just permission.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You hear that, and conditioning says, oh, well, then, if you can't stand it, I mean, quit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know, I'm really curious how this particular one would play out. But I just thought it really fun, exciting energy when I said that. Because I know every time that this process happens and this thing is met with compassion, and the next morning you wake up, or this one's not quite like that clear cut, but this thing is expensive. Give me the next one right now. I want to wake up every day and start with the scariest thing.
And then it's just remembering that sooner. No, this is fun.
Well, this is really helpful for what I forget. And so what I want to check in about is, so what I was looking at, the facilitator and mentor, the part that you played the other night of... I lost my job. And the Dave was so, I forget who's facilitating. what occurred to, I have that part. It's a different what, but I mean, I've got that part in here. And what I...
You know, a lot of people do. That's
yeah.
I can go into my program.
Well,
pretty much people know what I'm talking about.
Well, to me, that would have... I sort of knew right where to go for the facilitation. I mean, what I would do, anyway. So it seemed like facilitation was actually reflective listening at first. So she just knew that you were right there with her. And then going into mentoring. I mean, if it was here. And that's, I guess, why I wanted to check in with other people's experiences with it, because I guess I haven't got enough of it to trust it yet. But that's, it seems like that I've heard, you know, that part is heard, and then it can go into the mentoring. Does that make sense?
Who's doing this at this point? Are you facilitating?
Well, let's say you
are
crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah, no, if it was external, mentoring is not your facility.
Yeah. Okay.
And I guess I was...
So you're talking about when that part of you...
I started with the external and then was looking at if that were going on here.
Yeah.
So it's like I am facilitating myself, but then it does a switch, and I guess that's why I was bringing up the question, because I thought, gosh, it seems like both apply at times. It depends, you know, on what's going on.
On the facilitation to the mentoring, the inside, you know,
talking about it.
You can tell I'm not tracking.
Internal is what I'm talking about right now.
Okay.
That I see for myself in a way, this is new, so I'm experimenting. I mean, part of it is new. The mentoring has been there, but I realize I haven't really been facilitating like I would be helpful.
So if you were that part that I was blank, you're lost in a story. You're really buying into this story, and suddenly you come to, and you realize that this is going on.
Right.
Yeah, and then you would begin to facilitate the person who is telling that story.
Right.
Inside, yeah.
Right.
You would step back into the facilitation mode, and you would be facilitating that part of you.
Right.
Am I?
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then, are you wondering if at some point you mentor that person?
No, it just seems to me, I'm just checking in on this, it seems like a natural transition then that once that part feels heard, facilitating, it's like that the ranting doesn't have to continue, that part's been heard.
Well, yeah, it is a part.
Oh,
assuming it is an actual part of you. Then yes. Now that's an interesting place. So let's assume it is an actual aspect of the personality and not conditioning. Very often, of course, when you get somebody who is that, you know, all over the place, it's not an aspect of the personality, but conditioning just running out. But it is. And so that part is terrifying. You know, if I remember correctly, she's going to get fired and she's going to lose the house and the kids are going to starve and all of that sort of thing. And so she's terrified. And you're facilitating her, you know, with what's been, you're listening. So, you know, you're really afraid you're going to lose your job and you're afraid that you might have money and, okay, I get that. And then there's moving into a mentoring role. It's not necessarily the case that there's anybody there to mentor. In other words, that could be someone who is so young, they actually shouldn't even be in that conversation. And so the person who would be mentored would actually be a different aspect of personality. Mm-hmm. So you would begin talking perhaps to the person who goes to work and begin to facilitate that person. And so you're really terrified that this is going to happen in your world. Okay, got that. All right, do we have any, who actually goes to work? And who could go to work? Who could do that? Which is a conversation that people don't have often enough. Okay, that's how, I think if I'm remembering correctly, everybody hates you at work. Which is a clue that this is not a centered grown-up who's going to work every day.
So irregardless of the what you're saying, I mean, what I was talking about, so what's your difference? But what you're saying is to look at who is really there then.
Yes. Because it might not, for instance, if Phil has a terrified 3-year-old, she doesn't want to mentor that 3-year-old to get on that motorbike bike and get out of traffic. Okay, so there's mentoring, being in that compassionate, loving, embracing relationship with that 3-year-old, but that's not necessarily going to result in a behavior that, so it could be just that the wrong person is there, which is often the case. So the wrong person is there, we take care of that person. That little child would say, well, that's okay. Why don't you go get a book and grow up in bed and I'll be back from work pretty soon.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really get in my backpack and ride along. But you really want somebody with all of their adult capabilities to be doing the job.
Right. No, that's really helpful, because what I was using was with my the situation with my dad. All the stuff that needs to be done, but the one that goes into, oh my God, how are we going to, the same, coming from that place, so that distinction is really helpful.
Yes. And probably the one who gets hysterical is not somebody who should actually be participating there at all.
Right.
And her whole issue might be, all of the emotion could be about seeing her daddy in that place. And but she wouldn't want to try to facilitate her or mentor her into being his caregiver.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that distinction solves a huge confusion, dilemma, whatever, what's needed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. That's very important.
I'm really appreciating this conversation. I think I'm actually maybe having an experience of this right now. So I guess I'll just present it.
Mm-hmm.
So circumstances have changed a little bit for myself on the retreat. And so what I thought, I had a kind of a strong experience of mentoring earlier throughout the course of this retreat so far. Kind of I would suggest maybe the strongest that I've had in my experience of practice. And so once things kind of shifted a little bit, then it seemed like, okay, so now I'm going to mentor in a different way. And what I'm realizing from this conversation is that perhaps that's what the enabling was, because the course of my day has been kind of very checked out and very kind of like, it's okay, you can no longer really kind of show up the way you wanted to, but you did you kind of got from this what you hoped for, and I'm really proud of that aspect of it and stuff, but it's time to shut it down now, and I still love you. And so there's elements of facilitation in there, but it seems like in a lot of ways that there's a sense of there wasn't like a pitying so much. I mean, there's a slight hint of the pitying, but more like a let's look to the future now. What comes next kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so what I just saw as I was sitting here was this other voice that came in and was saying, with I think the word conviction kept coming to me, which was, circumstances have changed, and you're still a valuable part of this retreat, and your voice can still be heard. It may not look like it did before, but there's no reason why you have to kind of be the wilting flower or whatever. That
you don't need to go away.
You don't need to go away.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, that's good. Because very subtle and very big, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if it's changed, then... So why don't you just... your thought there.
Yeah.
Turn your attention to something else. This is really over. This is... Mm-hmm. Rather than... Okay, the structure may change, but the content may change, but you can be just as present.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really it was huge for me to see just now, because the attention gets turned to somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
The enabling, it seems like the attention is it's kind of a superficial facilitating element. Kind of like a licking of the wounds or a just kind of sugarcoating everything.
Well, it's kind of a you're fine, really. But it has a dismissive quality, or a that kind of more creepy feeling that it's really not about you.
Mm-hmm.
Where that's coming from is not taking care of you. It's meant to look like that and sound like that, but it's not that. One piece of it is, it's not It's not, what do you need?
Yeah, that's exactly, that was more, that's exactly the thing, like, what do you need? So there's, you know, there's a part of me that's still scared to be speaking right now. But there, it's in an environment that's, there's a need here, and it's kind of like there's a conviction to it, and there's a sense of present moment to it. I don't have the words for it right now, but there just seems like a the energy is there for it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the enabling, the energy is just dissipated beyond all belief. I mean, it's just a daze. It's like a it's like a cloud of you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really grateful for people sharing, and I got a lot out of that.
Mm-hmm. Because it is so subtle. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things that God knows I'm a parent, I've got to try to be hard on parents, but so much of parenting falls into that category.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the parent who's sort of there, you know, and there's that, you know, you just know that they don't really see you, it's not. It's just superficial. It's not touching the place where you live.
Yeah, it's not looking after this person at all.
Although it's meant to look that way.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Hey, I'm doing all of this for you. Okay. I know I believe that.
Yeah. It's so slick and it's so smooth and it's so. It's like. It's almost all pomp and circumstance in a way, but there's no substance to it, and that's kind of the dissipation of energy in some ways. Like my experience of it was just the feeling of everything just kind of just falls away.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, this is you did a good job.
Yeah, you did. And you know, Sunday we can.
Actually, this just brought up something for me that's now I'm a little confused by it. So, I had a situation, with my nephew, and so now I'm not sure if this was enabling or if it was, because when you brought the kids, right? So here's this, we're at this party, and he's not wanting to go out and play with all the other little kids, and so I'm like, come on, go, it's okay, I'm right here, and he's like, no, he just wanted to sit on my lap the entire time. And I had this, I watched how I was like, why are you not going? What's wrong with you? You're supposed to go out and play with everyone. Because, you know, that's what I did. And you should be out there playing with everyone. And then, though, it shifted to this sense of like, well, okay, he clearly doesn't really want to go out and play with everyone. He wants to sit here and watch. Okay, great. So why don't we just enjoy sitting here and watching? And now I'm...
Is this Tommy?
Yeah, this is Tommy. So I sunk into the, he just wants to, okay, great, you know, I don't see him that happen, great, so, okay, great, he wants to sit on my lap, yay, because someday he won't want to, so let's enjoy it. But now all of a sudden, as I'm, you know, all of a sudden I got this sense of like, well, so was I enabling him to be clingy and...
Well,
no,
Tommy has some issues.
Oh, yeah.
No, so,
any kindest way of having issues right now.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, really.
You know, yeah, he does.
He's a hard little kid to read.
Yeah.
So,
he has attachment issues, for sure. So,
yeah.
Well, and that even makes it even more apparent then. Is that enabling, or,
it's such a... I can't say. You know, it's such a challenging place because he does have horrific trauma.
Right.
And then there he is with all of these adults who kind of come and go. You know, he's not a normal little kid that you're with him all the time, and so, you know, you would be able to read what's going on with him, and you would be able to say, you know, well, if I go with you, would you, you know, or...
Right.
I mean, it's just a lot to try to read. And So, I mean, if it were me, I would just risk the error of being on the side of unconditional.
Right.
Not so much in behavior, but just in attitude. Mm-hmm. You know, just sort of energetically doing everything to let him know that whoever he is okay. Not enough to be able to say or...
Yeah, and I think that's what the shift happened, was, okay, well, yeah, I mean, just that sense of being with, in a way that's unconditionally loving and approving of, okay, well, there's nothing wrong if you don't want to go with all the other little kids. Even initially, though, that's how I felt, because I was like, oh, you know.
Well, sure, we could get contrary.
Right.
It's a great thing. If he were right. A happy little kid.
Who could just run on, yeah.
Wouldn't that be great, but he's not.
Yeah.
And, you know. He may want to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I mean, he's not going to look back on his childhood the way mm-hmm. a lot of the kids will look back on their childhood as
I don't know. There's like that piece, though, that I feel like I don't want to enable that of him living in a place of, oh, poor me, I'm this kid who has all this stuff that happened to him, you know? And that's the place I go, like, that feels so familiar to me. I think that's why it came up, because is that enabling then, or is there that sense of...
Here to me is the essential piece of this. That when we look at these issues, we can only know for ourselves.
Right.
We really can't know. Now, you could watch in yourself whether you are into some kind of conditioned caretaking of him, mm-hmm. or whether you can stay as centered as possible, knowing that he's fine, whatever it is that he's going through, that he's equal to his life and that sort of thing. But for you, for any of us, to try to make those decisions about somebody else is really shaky, even if it's a little kid.
Right. So I think that, so watching that piece that arises in me when I'm projecting.
On either side. Oh, you know, I really want to push him out there because that's how I was, and I was a happy little kid, and, or, well, you know, okay, and you can sit here because you're traumatized. Right. Rather than, you know, just from here, this is just what's going on. Mm-hmm. And my job is to be as centered as possible as I'm with both of us.
Yeah. Which feels just such a familiar place internally for all of these people, you know, the mentor, the facilitator, the mm-hmm. enabler.
Yeah. And in that centered place, you might get information. If something might occur to you to try with him, mm-hmm. that he might really respond to. But from that place, is that a sneeze?
Yes.
From that place of, you know, it's not really good for you to want to do.
Well, that was just making me think of some of the most moving moments for me in the There Is Nothing Wrong With You work are when people remember that person who loved them unconditionally mm-hmm. and can go to the experience that they had or, you know, however that works, of being with Aunt Susie or Grandma, or that just that presence has so much potential impact on people throughout their lives, even if it's just one person who is able to be with them and not expect anything of them in the sense of having to be a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not having to meet a standard.
Yeah.
Priceless.
knowing that there was nothing wrong with them.
At least in that moment.
Yeah.
With that person.
Okay. I feel like I've blinked and missed something. This whole retreat, I haven't heard reassured used as a verb. And it came up a little while ago with this talk about mentoring and enabling. And I was wondering if almost expecting reassure to come up in that discussion, and it didn't. And so now I'm kind of confused about.
Shall I reassure you?
I prefer to be
mentored.
Why hasn't reassuring come? Okay, what does the mentor do? What is the mentor? Does the mentor reassure?
Well, the mentor certainly could reassure. The mentor is certainly reassuring in the sense of being a clear and centered presence.
If it's not the mentor who's reassuring, then who is?
Well, of course, now that's a loaded question because it could be anybody.
Well, I mean,
because it there's a way in which this whole conversation about enabling comes from a false reassurance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That really helps. Yeah, and sometimes, as Melinda is talking about, when people go to that place of who loved you unconditionally, they will draw upon that person as kind of a compassionate, wise presence in their life who reassures them. Somebody who lets them know that they're fine the way they are and that sort of thing. So it's one of those places that's very difficult to describe for somebody else. And I'll tell you what, periodically somebody will say to me, and perhaps others of you when you're facilitating, but it was this kind of almost wild-eyed look. And then I heard this voice, and it wasn't my voice, and it said, "I love you." Where did that come from? And have you had that experience?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's like, wow. Okay. I don't quite know where to put that. Okay. So we want to be open to all sorts of possibilities. From a mentor who's just simply older and wiser, has that wise quality, that feeling of really knowing us well and knowing what we're capable of, and being reassured perhaps by that, but then also moving into that role and being the mentor for parts of ourselves. One of the places that I know you've heard me describe often is the one that I think personally is the most significant place in practice, and that is when you are there being you, and you don't even have to be doing or being anything extraordinary. You're just being you, and you're doing whatever it is that you do, and awareness is there, aware of that, and it's as if it's happening at the same time. So there's an awareness that is not identified at all with the you that you usually think of as being what you are. And so there's this unbelievably intimate experience of a human being that is you but is not you by an awareness that is you, but is not you. Okay. So moving in and out of those states from completely identified with God knows what to stepping back into that disidentified place and being able to observe, you know, last night you were doing that, doing the key, was that last night? You know, and that so much of that facilitating people in that way is helping somebody to disidentify. Now, most people who will come to a situation like that have disidentified, but they don't know it. And so it's what we did the very first night of the retreat when I asked you to step into awareness and observe the person. So that's that disidentifying, where a person is learning to step back and observe themselves. You know, now, at this point, they don't know that that movement is actually taking place, that they have just stepped out of what they think of them as themselves, but that's what they're beginning to practice. So then there's the step after that of facilitating. So now the person is stepped back from a part of themselves and actually practicing being disidentified from that person and facilitating them. And then there's feeling the mentor come in, or that compassionate presence, and feeling embraced by that compassionate presence. Yeah? And then there is moving into that compassionate presence, that unconditional place, which is different from the facilitator, right? Because the facilitator isn't necessarily in that centered compassionate place. And then there is perhaps an experience that feels slightly different of being in the compassionately accepting place, being with someone, knowing that they're fine, being able to offer reassurances, a mentoring that feels less involved, okay? It less, it's almost, this is so terrible, forgive me, but the one is the classic mother and the other is the classic father. Okay, so the mother wants to make sure you got your cookies and milk, and the father wants to make sure that you did your homework. That kind of...
That's squishy.
Yeah. And so the mentor can often be that more detached feeling. The mentor really doesn't take this person personally. Just sees that this is an inadequate person. And then there's that one that I started out talking about, where suddenly you're going along being whoever or whatever you are, and you hear a voice that is not you talking to you, and yet at some deep level you know it is who you are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, that was very helpful.